Blog Talk Radio.
He is the last of his kind. All that remains of a once powerful nation. Some think he is a myth. Some believe he is the chosen one, who will bring balance to a world at war. And some will stop at nothing to destroy him.
I'm your host, Tahaka Amana El Bay, and today's broadcast is part two of from the Moorish American Archives of Tahaka. Tonight, we're going to bring you a brand new segment of the best of our previous archive broadcast, and so you all sit tight. We're offering our free articles as usual. The 14th Amendment Exposed, as well as the Commerce Game, How to Play, the history of the United States and its debt, and many other articles are available to you right here in the most comprehensive archives in the United States. And to the way to access these free articles, just simply contact me at tahaka53@hotmail.com, or you can contact me before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time at area code 904-303-9061, okay? And that is the same number that you will use when attempting to access the library itself and get your copy of my library. Don't forget that on the 18th of this month, Dr. Scott Whitaker will be right here in Jacksonville, Florida at Masjid El Salam's bookstore located right here on Pearl Street. And also on the 11th through the 13th of January, we'll be hosting a workshop right here in Jacksonville at the Best Western. And that way you're able to learn and get some more information on our economic summit and ways to earn you some money. So make sure you're here or contact me in regards to these things at area code 904-303-9061. And make sure you do that before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Without further ado, we're going to get right into the broadcast.
The jurisdiction is the power that the court has to pry into the facts and make a decision. Okay? Like you have the jurisdiction over your children. Now, I'm going to take that back.
No, you don't.
Do you know you don't have jurisdiction over your children? And especially your brothers. Mm-hmm. I know you said I'm pretty hard on you, but we are the only powerless men on the planet. Mm-hmm. Powerless. In order to be a man, you got to have free national standards, you got to have free national principles, and you must have power to be a man. Somebody has been messing with you. Fake you a right out. I'm a man. That ain't what I say. I'm a grown age man. It sounds familiar.
Yeah. That's the word, man.
It sounds good when you put it in music with Tupac and they'll know it.
Yeah.
Okay? But in reality, let us sister take you downtown. Did I say downtown?
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Take you to George Washington.
Uh-oh.
Oh, y'all thought George Washington was dead?
No. In the courthouse.
I seen them pretty buildings Portland got some pretty jail buildings downtown.
Woo!
Sweet. What's that? It just take me right out of that. That's a jail? I mean, I know the more I say that, I know it's big business, but come on now. That looks like a mall. Big plate glass windows downstairs. Who knew? Okay. Y'all didn't know crime pays in America. We got over 13 million single moms. You can't have a nation of people like that. There's something wrong with that picture. How'd it get that way? Okay? You got over 3 million brothers locked up. Okay? Another 6 million on paper. Better not do it no more. Okay, you know what that means? That's what they have in the credit report gone bad, okay? It is, because you can't grow, you can't move. Why? Because you're a felon. Somebody put a stamp on you to say, hey, you don't go no farther.
That's right.
Okay? You're being gauged by their owners, okay?
Illustrate.
We're here to give you your freedom back. But freedom rests with all freedom, and this is the work of the great creator. He put the freedom of every living thing into its memory. Okay? Black people ain't got no memory of ever being free, because black people ain't never been free. Negroes never been free. Okay? African Americans, they never been free. They was made right here in America. Come on now. They didn't come out of Africa.
That's right.
Africa had nations and nationalities.
That's right.
Little places like Ghana, Sudan, and things, okay? That don't sound like no black land to me. We have a little game that we play called Out of the Pot. And we do this with most of the audiences, you know, and where that we ask for willing participation, you know, from the audience. And we ask you to make a stand when we call you. We give you a status first. Or that lack thereof, you know. If you are German, we ask you to stand, and then we ask you if you are any kind of Sudanese, you know, whatever, Irish. Then we ask for a real strong black man to stand up, and you know, a colored woman, or something, you know, and an African American. The trick comes in here, because then we say, all right. Now, the seat that you were sitting in, it also bears the name of your country. But your name, your free national name, also matches the name of your chair. So you have a seat. So German, the dude whoever the German is, his chair should be called what?
German.
Germany. He can have a seat. Okay? The Sudanese should have a chair called what?
Sudan.
Have a seat. Where the black person gonna say that?
Black man.
Oh, I got a good one. What about the Afro, the African American? That's a good one. What? Well, what's the matter? Oh, it ain't no country. These are continents. Ain't neither continent got no flag. This is the flag of the United States, not America. They call it the American flag. We know better. Okay? Africa don't have no flag. You got 56 countries in Africa. Which one is yours? Take your choice. But you're going to call yourself an African American. Right. You ain't got no chair to sit in either. Okay? So the name game, the status game has been played. Okay? Who has jurisdiction over all black people? The one that made us. If you got a dog, as long as that dog is in your yard, on your chain, eating your food, you can call it what you want to. Butch, spot, Negro, black person, it don't matter. That's your dog. I know that I got a little southern accent too, but don't bear with me. Okay? But that's still your dog. They, you know what? They even say that, call each other that. My dog. That's sad. And we like it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm your dog. Okay? Something wrong with that picture. All right? So when somebody knocked you in the head and put you in this shallow grave, what does the shallow grave look like today? Because I go to church. Don't get me messed up. I ain't in no shallow grave, Lord's
right.
sake.
That's right.
No. So what does the shallow grave look like today? It looked like the 14th Amendment. Let me tell you what happened. Because I like laws, all right? You have been enslaved by the laws of the United States and didn't even know it. All right? The United States abolished slavery in 1865 with the 13th Amendment. Remember that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
1865, they completely abolished. It didn't free nobody. It just abolished the system of slavery that held you down.
Mm-hmm.
There's a difference. Because if you remember, 2 years earlier, President Lincoln wrote the Emancipation Proclamation. Didn't free nobody. Okay? All they did was, because he was at war.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So by him being the president, it was another title. The chief of what?
The
executive chief of military.
Uh-huh.
That's the president's station, right?
Yeah.
So under that auspices, he wrote the Emancipation Proclamation against his enemy. Because the strength of his enemy was slavery, which was the South, right?
Mm-hmm.
So he wrote the Emancipation Proclamation, say, well, free them all. That take away some of the strength from his enemy, and the rest is history. 2 years later, Congress, which is only Congress can act on a nation of people anyway, Congress wrote the 13th Amendment and abolished slavery. Okay? Oh, did you know that in 1861, another thing, the Southern Confederate United States, whose headquarters in Richmond, Virginia, they abolished slavery 2 years before the United States did? Yeah. Check the record. Okay? Anyway, 1865, the United States Congress abolished slavery. Okay? But 3 years later, because you have been hit in the head so hard, see what happened? See that flag over there? No, this the white one. Okay?
Yeah.
It says, the great seal of the Morris American nation since 1865 AD, okay? And when they wrote the United, when they abolished slavery, that's when we became a nation of people. You couldn't have became a nation of people prior to the advent of the dissolution of slavery. Make sense?
Islam.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? When slavery ended, we became a people, but then nobody tell us.
That's right.
Okay,
right.
We was hitting the head so hard, we thought I was free. We, you know, we
right.
just, yeah, hey.
That's right.
Yeah, they abolished slavery, so I was free. That was it.
That's
but
right.
You're free what? I was a free Negro.
Mm.
I ain't on the plantation no more, so I'm a free Negro. Okay, but 3 years later, the same Masons got together.
Mm.
Okay, did you also know? Let me tell you about, since those brothers who think y'all are still Masons, how come y'all didn't produce the KKK?
Mm.
That came out the lodge too, you know.
Ooh.
To scare Negroes.
That's right.
And they went wild from 1865 until 1965. 100 years, the United States turned them loose on you.
Mm.
That's where the picnic come from. Pick a nigga and kill it. Okay? All right? So what we're talking about in 1868, 3 years later, the United States Congress, because you must remember the Civil War was a terrible battle between two brothers. Okay? They called it North and the South, but we know what it is, the blue and the gray. But it was actually brothers, though. Remember, one was the Confederate, one was the Union. They're still two brothers of the same what? Lodge. Because you must remember, a Mason is a person who got power. Have you ever seen a Negro Mason with power?
No.
No more than to snitch. That's all he did. That's what the Prince Hall was used for, a snitch. I know y'all mad at me again before y'all leave out of here, boy. Okay, but see, I need to give you this so you'll know what they're working with before you get too mad at me. Okay? So what they did in 1868, Congress wrote the 14th Amendment, and see if this reads sounds familiar to you. 14th Amendment, United States Congress, 1868. 3 years after they abolished the slavery with the 13th Amendment, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All persons, that's a master word, all persons born or naturalized, right, and subject to the jurisdiction are hereby citizens. And we took that and ran with it. Mm-hmm. Boogity, 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 boogity. I said all persons, but when you look up the word person as described and used in the 14th Amendment, it means commercial property. The same thing that it means in the Moroccan Treaty between George Washington and Muhammad, which goes right back where I started from. That treaty was about commercial property. Now, what was the greatest commerce? Y'all want know, you know about business, commerce. What was the greatest commercial thing going on in 1786 where the treaty was written between Morocco and the United States?
Slave trade.
Right, the West African slave trade. And your leader in Morocco, Muhammad, bless his Arab loving heart, turned his back on you and sold us into slavery. Okay, and he continued it because he wrote a treaty with George Washington. Did you know that George Washington and his wife Martha owned 400 more of us while he was in Philadelphia, the first president in office? Yeah, they had 400 slaves that he was the president. Because why? For a Western Freemason, listen to this, you Mason brothers, okay? A Western Freemason and slave master, these two terms are synonymous with each other.
Mm-hmm.
It was a matter of prestige to own a slave and be a Mason. Now, how many Masons have the slaves that you know, the Masons that you know, how many slaves they own? Including their own, yes. I'm waiting. Okay. Now we got that resolved. All right. The word person in the 14th Amendment means commercial property. Look it up. Okay. So now let's see how it reads on your birth certificate. All persons born, all property born. Let's look at your birth certificate. Look at it real good. Do it have the state of Oregon seal on it? Does it have the state seal on the state that you was born? Huh? That's a smoking gun. Because the only way the state seal can put their seal on it is that it got to be authorized by Congress, which is under the 14th Amendment, to keep you a slave. Now, would you do what you have done all your life if you knew that you was not black?
Mm.
Would you carry it like that? Would you live the life that you have lived if you knew you were something else other than who you thought you were? No. I'm not going to give you that much credit. No. So let's be...
Hey guys, I wanted to discuss the reasons why black women are least likely to get married and be in relationships. Everybody kind of like, it's kind of common knowledge that out of every gender and race combination, black women are the least likely to get married and find love. So I wanted to kind of discuss the reasons why. So I talked to a few different guys to get their perspectives on what they think about black women and misconceptions that they have about black women. And I compiled a list of 8 reasons why men don't date black women or misconceptions that they have about black women. First on the list was that they are inconsiderate. We are inconsiderate, I should say. A lot of guys that I have spoke with have said that they feel like black women are not considerate. They don't do sweet things for them. They don't text them good morning, just things like that. And I mean, I don't think this is accurate. I think there are a lot of black women, myself included, that are very sweet and considerate. But I feel like, yes, black women, a lot of us are very hard. And the reason that we are this way is because, I don't want to say society has made us this way, but black women have a lot to deal with. You know, being a minority, we are a double minority. Not only are we women, we are black women. You know, so we experience racism and sexism, while black men only experience racism, you know, and white women only experience sexism. We experience, you know, like both ends of the spectrum. So it's kind of like we, even back from slavery days, we have this hard exterior because society, we deal with a lot from society. So we, a lot of us are very hard. We're, like Lauryn Hill said, don't be a hard rock when you're a gem. That's what a lot of us black women are. So the reason we are like this is because we have, you know, the circumstances that the cards we are dealt with have caused us to, we know that we have to be strong. A lot of us don't let our guards down. We feel like we have to be strong at all times. And so this is probably a reason why many, many people feel like black women are inconsiderate. Another reason that I've heard why black, not only black guys, but why guys don't like black women or date black women is because we're not into diversity. A lot of black women do not like seeing women of other races date black men. The reason many black women feel this way is because of the lack and shortage of good black men. You know, many black men are, you know, on the streets doing illegal things, or they may be incarcerated. So, you know, there's a shortage of good black men. So when we do have or find a good black man, we don't want him to be taken by, you know, like we kind of want to procreate amongst our own race. This doesn't reflect my view, but I can understand why somebody would feel, why a black woman would feel this way, you know, because there's such a shortage. Other races, I feel like, don't have such a serious shortage of black men like, you know, like the black race does. So, not all black women are not into diversity, but that's kind of a reason why, you know, black women don't necessarily like to see people of other races date black men. I've dealt with this myself, but guys, black guys, you know, white guys, whatever type of guys, don't like when black women, they don't like the idea of us wearing fake hair. They don't like that we wrap our hair at night. They don't like any of that stuff. You know, like, I used to date somebody who didn't like for me to wrap my hair. And I just don't understand what, like, you know, like, we like our, you know, different hairstyles. And we black women were made to feel like our hair and our hairstyles were inadequate. We, you know, were made to feel like anything closer to white is, you know, what we need to be, which is why we put relaxers and different types of straighteners and chemical treatments in our hair to change the texture, because we are ingrained to feel like black hair is nappy, as you know, and nappy and kinky hair will not get you the job. You need straight and more Western, more Caucasian hair. That's the reason why we do. And anyone who has had a relaxer knows, if you just go to sleep with your hair like that, I mean, I know, I actually have a friend who just goes to sleep with that, her hair like that, and doesn't wrap it, but you have to wrap your hair. And wrapping, for those who don't know, is when black women and women, I guess, I don't know what other race of women gets relaxers, but it's basically when people with relaxed hair comb their hair and wrap it around their head. And this kind of gives your hair more body when you wake up, but having a relaxer is kind of essential to wrap your hair. Or even if you have your hair is straightened, it's kind of like necessary to wrap it. So these are three things that I have heard that many guys say, three reasons why a lot of guys do not date or like black women, you know, reasons why they don't date us, things that they don't like, misconceptions. So these are three of the eight. I'm going to make another video because this one's getting kind of lengthy. I'm going to make another video that has other reasons why and my answers as to why we do the things that we do. So check out my next video. Yeah, tell me what you guys think.
Greetings. My name is Najma Muhammad, and I wrote an open letter of apology to black men in hopes of reconciliation. It was originally posted on the blackman.com website. It's been shared with other sites, and I've received a lot of interesting commentary on my letter, so I decided to respond via video. But before responding, I do want to read the letter for those of you who might not have read it.
Okay, Mose, I just want to get back in and say thank you to all of you who are coming into today's broadcast. And we're going to get on into the area of dealing with your trust and your last will and testament. That's very, very important for us to deal with. And we're going to start off with this segment here. And keep in mind, for those of you who are just tuning in, you're listening to the Best of Talkers Archives. And the way to access me in regards to getting your free articles and getting a copy of the most comprehensive library in the United States is to contact me before 7 p.m. at area code 904-303-9061, and we'll get you in there, okay?
Greetings and welcome to thctrust.org. Briefly, I want to talk about status and standing, and then I want to go into some ways that you can establish your status and your standing. The reason I decided to speak about this topic is because I get a lot of questions at, you know, when people become aware that something is wrong and they become aware that their rights are being violated, and you know, they start to learn and hear about the straw man. And then some people that have just been in different movements for long periods of time, but they still, you know, they hear so much information, but they don't know where to start or what direction to go in. And you know, a lot of people say, well, how can I become sovereign, or how can I become indigenous, or how can I take myself out the system? And you know, first thing I want to say is that sovereignty is a state of being. It's not one document or one thing that you can do that's going to establish yourself as being sovereign and make everyone aware and recognize it and immediately say, hey, we're going to leave this guy alone because he's a sovereign. It's a lifestyle and it's a way of being. However, I do want to read over a document that I wrote that is going to address the root concern of what people are trying to get to. At least I feel that's what they want to know when they ask me the questions, you know, how can I become sovereign or take myself out the system or whatever. Now, what I'm going to discuss can be found on the website that I'm currently administering. So, and please overlook some things because it is under construction. You know, I am the first trustee as well as the administrator. So it is going to be a membership site, by the way. It's not membership right now. So you're free to go there and browse around. Click the topics menu. There's a lot of information that I've been uploading, and I will be uploading more information. And I also want you to encourage you to help support what we're trying to do at thctrust.org. And you can support by simply making a donation. And right now, if you click under the new products link, you will find a book that we've produced. And this book tells you how to acquire abandoned and vacant properties in a very seamless, straightforward, easy method. You don't have to be a guru. You don't have to be a sovereign master. And this process can be done in probably maybe 6 to 8 weeks. So if you're living with someone that you don't want to be living with, or if you, you know, maybe you need another form of employment, you can use the process that we teach in this guide to acquire these abandoned, vacant, foreclosed homes and rent them out, and maybe help your community and help yourself. So make sure you click on the new products page. You can check that out. We're only asking for, I think it's what, $20, $25. It's an excellent book. It has all the forms and everything you need. And as a matter of fact, when I finish this video, I think I'm going to do another video and pretty much tell you the process of exactly what is written in the book. However, it would benefit you to buy the book because, you know, the process involves performing work on a vacant property, filing a lien, and foreclosing on your lien. It'll benefit you to purchase the book because I've spent many, many hours and I've completed template documents for for every single thing that you need to do, and that's all in the book. But anyways, let me get to the subject of what I wanted to discuss, which is establishing your status in a kind of step-by-step method. So listen closely, and the documents that I'm going to be discussing, you can get those documents for free, the template that I've provided, and they are also on thctrust.org. If you click under the link that says Foundation and then the link that says Establishing Your Status. So I'm just going to read pretty much from this document, and I'll put my little two cents in where I think it's necessary. Essential steps to establishing your status. There is a minimum of 3 key documents one needs to properly establish his status as the executor and heir to the land of his estate. After reading and completing the documents attached, you will have established your status in writing and for the record. This article does not touch on the extent of the protections and remedies that lay within these documents when properly used. However, with certainty, these documents used together or similar documents serving these specific purposes will be the foundation to protect you and enforce your rights in almost any process or situation, whether you are bringing the claim or avoiding a claim. Okay, so the first document and the first thing of necessity, excuse me, is that you file a will. So the need for a will. The will is symbiotic in nature. On a spiritual level, it represents the evolution of a man in his spiritual ascension, whereas now the man is aware of himself outside of the vessel and therefore desires to move and navigate the vessel. The man's will serves to rebut the presumption that the man is lost at sea and therefore establishes to the world his desire for his vessel, which is to be protected and unimpeded. The same way a captain of a ship uses a steering wheel may be figuratively applied to the way in which we use our will to make our intention known. Through the will, the intentions of the navigator will manifest. Or you may say, through the will, the intentions of the grantor will manifest. As some of you already know, the will serves as a trust agreement in the public. And when I say the public, I'm talking about the commercial world or the contract world. Therefore, it is important that you express who the executor is so that in matters regarding your estate, and when I say estate, I'm talking about your body, your rights, your inheritance, your assets, everything that's the essence of what you possess here on the earth. That's your estate. But so in matters regarding the estate, let me read that again. Therefore, it is important that you express who the executor is so that in matters regarding your estate, everyone else, including state officials, awaringly become trustees. If there is no will on file for the man's vessel, one may assume that the vessel is empty and take possession of the vessel by use of the foreign law, the contract law. Let's see here. I'm going to finish reading through this and I'm going to expound on it some more with some personal words. Although what is taking place may seem unfair, everything is happening in accordance with the divine law, including the contract law. You know, what I'm basically saying is when things seem like they're unfair and we are being shifted around and pushed to and fro without any say, it is happening in accordance with the divine law. Now, the law of the sea, the contract law and the commercial system, you know, that is also a part of the divine law. It's just like everything else. There's a structure to everything. So, you know, I'm one to believe that a lot of what happens because of our lack of knowledge. But let me continue with the read. Every living man or woman should have their intentions made known in the form of a will. The will, in essence, serves the similar purpose of an affidavit or a bill. An affidavit is a charging instrument, and so is your will. The will of the testator, however, seems to be the highest ranking indenture, carrying more weight than an affidavit, even more weight than a sovereign declaration. It makes sense to be this way, as denying one's right to self-determination is a grave human rights violation that extends beyond the jurisdiction of the three-dimensional world. It is my opinion that we are perishing of, that's supposed to say, for our lack of knowledge, or basically for ignorance. Although I wish the pirates would release the slaves from the house of bondage, it is not their nature, as they require a vessel to feed upon and live through. It is our duty to free our own minds. If a claim is brought against the estate, the will is the law. If your will is appropriately foul, the court is required to notify the executor of the estate that a claim has been made against the estate, thereby affording the executor sufficient time to resolve the matter in accordance with the intentions of the estate. The testator who wrote the what is most important in the will is the rules of administration. The administration section should establish or adopt a procedure for adjudication and making claims against the estate. I encourage you to include your nation's court system or annex and attach the rules and guidelines governing the administrative process of which the executor will appropriately recognize and respond to. This is addressed in the same manner such as a court posts its local rules. One may also consider accepting for value and annexing to the will any Bill of Rights or human rights instruments such as UN Resolution 61-178, Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous People. Doing this puts in place a charging instrument, allowing the measure to be set whereby any trustee denying you due process may be held liable and charged. Basically, you can charge them based off of that instrument. Now, we just kind of went over the will, which I believe is the first important document for establishing your status. And although I read over this, I just want to kind of reiterate some things and point out some things that you can understand. Now, many of us are familiar with straw men and things of the such. Now, the straw man is really a trust, but when that trust is being subject to some type of proceeding, whether criminal or civil, you need to look at this is kind of a hard concept for me to explain, but although these straw man accounts are trusts, when they become subjects of a court system or a proceeding, they are now in a state. And technically, in a state, a state is kind of, how can I say it? It's a state of being, if you will. So you can look at it like the estate of your trust. Like what is the status of your trust? This is kind of a better way to look at it. But the point that I wanted to make is that whenever you're facing a criminal or civil proceeding, what is occurring is that someone is trying to adjudicate a claim against your estate. Somebody is claiming that they have been damaged, and they're bringing the claim against your estate expecting to be compensated. So the reason why you want to have a will, well, let's think about it like this. Most people don't have a will on file. And now when you hear the term will, don't only think of it as the document. Think of it about, what is a will? A will is your intentions, what you're putting forth, what your desires is, right? The same way a corporation has a corporate charter, or the same way a state has a constitution, is the same way that your SESTA-K trust should have a will or an intention on file, because at some level it's being construed to be a corporation. And if you have no declaratory document establishing the intent or the rules and the regulations, then that's what allows the judge or another public trustee to assume the role as the administrator or the executor for your estate, because they say, hey, I'm a public trustee and I can assume this duty because the office is currently vacant and not occupied. You can just Google around, not even in the sovereignty or secure party movement, one of the most important things that you're going to find in every will is the will establishes the executor. And the and will also establish an executor is pretty much the chief administrator over the affairs of the estate. And he can appoint fiduciaries and trustees, and he can instruct them what to do. And this is not something that has just got, this is not something that was just made up in a secured party or the creditor movement. This is well established in law and in the legal system. So it would very much benefit you to provide a will solely for the purpose of establishing who the executor is, because this will allow you to have a stronger standing in court, because now they have to recognize that. If you have a will on file and it's a matter of public record, and there's somebody trying to adjudicate a claim against you, say let's say in like a criminal matter, well now you can pull that file and you can file that into the case, and it will become a matter of the record of who the executor of the estate is. Now you're putting the public trustee in a awkward position. And when I say public trustee, I'm talking about a judge or a magistrate or whoever it is sitting in that role, because they are 100% very much aware. Now, I'm talking from experience here. I'm talking from assisting people that have used this type of remedy. You put them in a very uncomfortable position, and you can actually see frustration about them because they lose their power and they lose their authority once they know that in writing and certified by affidavit and recognized and acknowledged by their court that there is an executor for the estate. Now, something else I wanted, I touched on it also in this article, is the administration section of the estate. That discusses what the intention is or what the will is for how administration and adjudication should take place against the estate. Testator's will. Now, a will is not just a mere affidavit. From my studies, the will is probably the highest form of a declaration that there is. And you have to look at it as such because, again, if you're denying someone to have an intention or a will, then you may as well come out and say, hey, you're just a slave, which is against all kind of law. Enforced contracts, being forced to comply with a contract that's one-sided, that you do not agree to or that you do not consent to, is basically the definition of slavery, right? So denying somebody the opportunity to manifest their will is serious. Now, as a result of that, I personally believe that is a lot of reason why people always say, go to an attorney to file your will. And it's been my experience that a lot of attorneys take your sovereign control of your estate out of your will by the verbiage and the words that they use. So I think you would be better served to do your research and file your own will. And then not only that, a lot of attorneys will not put your will into the record. They will hold it at their office, or they will hold it in a safe somewhere and wait until your physical body is off of this earth before they file your intention. So to me, it seems like it's a counterproductive system that's set up in a way to keep you in ignorance and to give you no control over your vessel, and to wait until you pass this world and then to reveal what should have been given to you while you were here. It's really something to think about. But anyways, I guess because this video has went on long enough, I would just make this the first part, and I'm going to discuss all three of these documents that I think you need to establish your status. And I'm also going to discuss the fourth step, which is not necessarily a document, but something that you may also want to consider. And you just got to bear with me. You may not understand how all these things work, but if you go to the site and you read, and again, that's under the foundation and the establishing your status step by step, you can read and you can click and download these documents. They're templates, so make sure you make them personal. And when you get through all of these, you'll see how they work together. So in the next video, I'm going to talk about the next document, which is your letter of executorship, which should occur after you file the will, and it should correspond with what's written in the will. Thank you for watching, and make sure you visit www.thctrust.org and continue to visit. Greetings. Welcome to thctrust.org. Now, in this video, I'm going to talk about establishing the executor, which is something that occurs in the will. And if you've downloaded the template will, you'll see how that is established in there. Now, I'm not going to spend too much time going into this because there's more than enough information. I would recommend you visit thctrust.org. And I will have some links to videos where individuals talk about the role of the executor of the estate. You can also look up some videos by Dean Clifford, and I believe he talks about the role of the executor. And more importantly, you can go to Google and Google executor for an estate. And I really think that's where you will find some of the best information because, you know, no, it's not written from the perspective of secured parties and indigenous people and Americans in the Republic and things like that. But the information doesn't change. The executor's role is the same, which is to collect the assets of the estate, to administer the affairs of the estate, to pay the debts of the estate. And that kind of is consistent with the whole concept of secure party creditor. You know, the executor is there to settle the claims against the estate, the same way that the secure party creditor was used to indemnify the Sesticay Trust or the straw man, if you will. So, and there's also, you can Google David Clarence. He has some videos, I believe there's some talk shows that talk about the role of the executor and some of the successes that they've had. The executor letter is a letter that you may want to use along with your letter of indigenous or sovereign standing, or your letter establishing your nationality, or your letter establishing your as a secure party creditor or an American in the Republic, whatever type of affidavit of that identifies who you are outside of being a United States citizen is probably beneficial to use together with the letter of executorship to really certify and establish your standing. But again, the executor is appointed in the will, and typically if you're successful filing your will where they file wills in at your county level, what will happen is they will issue a letter from the court establishing who the named executor was in the will. Now, this is very powerful if you can get that from the court with their seal on it. But even if you can't, you can produce your own and you can sign it in front of a notary and get it authenticated and witnessed, et cetera, et cetera. Now, on that note, I personally, because I am aware that there's a difference between, you know, the name means nothing. Some people feel uncomfortable about having a will for their all capital letter name and then establishing an executor in uppercase or lowercase or however form you do it that has the similar name. I don't have a problem with that. You know, that's the way I've done mine. But if you have a problem with that and you don't think you can effectively navigate using that method, then appoint somebody else that you trust. Now, I will tell you this. Doing it the first way I mentioned, by being your own executor, for lack of better terms, you may run into some problems. I've ran into some serious problems trying to get certain things filed that way. And, you know, it just depends. Every place is different. You might be able to do it seamlessly. You might have some problems. And if you do have problems, technically you can remove those problems if you have the know-how and if you have the time. But, you know, right now that'll just be something that you have to figure out. If you get jammed up in a specific area, perhaps you can send us an email and we can give you some ideas. Now, it is probably the most grave human rights violation to deny someone the opportunity to file a will under any circumstances, but in this day and age, don't be surprised, it may happen. So if that does happen to you, what's most important is you, if you can't get your will in the probate court or the county clerk, which is probably usually where it should be filed, then don't hesitate to go file it in the district, which I believe they have a $39 miscellaneous filing fee. And from my experience, they don't scrutinize and they don't prevent you from filing anything at the federal level. So look at your federal courts and your district courts to have your will put on the record if you cannot get it filed where it's supposed to be filed. Now, I'm going to go ahead back into reading this document, see if I have any good information here. Well, actually, you know what? I'm not going to go into reading this document because, you know, there's so much information about the role of the executor that I'm not going to even, you know, I'm not even put my two cents on it. So I say research it yourself. What I have provided at thctrust.org is I provided a template executor letter for your usage. This letter has been written very, very close to the same format that's used by the Department of the Navy for their official military correspondence. And the individual that drafted up that letter was actually, he was actually in the military and worked in administration, and he's very familiar with how they do things. So that's another gift from thctrust.org to you. And I guess that'll pretty much be it. Let me see if there's anything important that I'm missing in here. I'm scrolling through this document. Okay, well, there you go. Make sure you let me go ahead and read this real quick. Essentially, your executive letter will be used before you begin or initiate any process or proceeding with a public official or trustee. This is because you're letting them know, hey, you know, say if you have a matter that you're trying to get resolved, as soon as you, whoever, whatever public trustee is involved, whether it's Secretary of State or, you know, a sheriff or whoever it is, as soon as they receive your letter, your executor letter, then that establishes who the executor is of this particular matter and of your estate, thereby forcing them into the role of public official, you know, forcing them into the role of fiduciary or trustee. Now, I also want to encourage you to consider modifying and updating the executor letter that we provided. Everything you need to make it personal. You need to make it your own. And there's a section under the executor letter that specifically talks about the role of trustees and fiduciaries. So you can beef that up and make it personal. So for whatever you want to convey to public trustees as relates to your estate and your status, you can add into that letter. Now, it's really important to make all these letters, whether it's your will or your letter of executorship or the next one that we're going to talk about, which is your sovereign or national declaration, it's important that you have those recorded and that they are a matter of public record, okay? And maybe we'll go into that later, but for right now, just understand that it's not just important to just have these documents certified for yourself in your own personal files, which you should. They also should be a matter of public record. Because, as I said before, affidavits, which essentially is what your executor letter and your sovereign and national declaration, those are all affidavits. They're charging instruments, but you can't hold someone liable if the information wasn't made known to them. So, again, you have to put that in the public. All right, so the executor letter can be found at thctrust.org under the foundation menu. The link for establishing your status, you can read through that and you can find the will in the executor letter. Also, again, I want to encourage you to help support what we're doing here. And let me tell you where we're trying to get to, what at least my major focus and what I really want to dedicate a large portion of the website and our organization to, and that is getting people out of jail, getting people out of prison, because there's a lot of people in there for bogus, petty, statutory crimes that are not really crimes at all. and they're doing a lot of time and they don't need to be there. And it's just the time, you know, it's the time to think about somebody else and not think about yourself. So you can be out spending your money on other things, but, you know, it would benefit us and it would benefit you to donate to THCTrust.org. And you can do that by looking under our products menu. Right now we only have one product, and that product is, again, showing you how to take possession of an abandoned or vacant house. Step-by-step method, and I've provided all the legwork for you. So the last document that I think is critical and essential in establishing your status is your sovereign or indigenous declaration, and or your, you know, your national, your documents of nationalization. Now, it doesn't matter. Everybody, you know, you're your own. You declare who you are. Now, I have a template on this website for a withdrawal or removal of United States citizenship in a declaration of sovereign and indigenous standing. I highly advise that you don't use that document unless you do a lot of reading about it, or unless you feel that it is personal to who you are. Because, you know, if you use that document, you're not a United States citizen, okay? So, and you don't have to use that document. The only reason I feel that you should have some type of declaration on file is because when you establish the executor for the estate, or, you know, for the Sestake Trust, now you need to give the executor status as being outside and not subject to the jurisdiction of the commercial system. So I hope you see how those documents work together. So say, for example, somebody was filing a criminal procedure against your estate. Well, on one level, you can consider filing the will into the record jacket of that case, but you can consider removing the case, doing a notice of removal and removing it to the probate court, because we are aware that they're trying to adjudicate a claim against your estate and you have the will on file. So you can consider removing it to the probate court and filing into the record jacket, and this is something that you always want to do. If you have your status established and somebody's bringing a claim against you, whether civil or criminal, the first thing you need to do is file into the record jacket of that matter your status, which should include your letter of executorship and your sovereign declaration. Those two things should be there. And again, you know, there's templates for all this on the site, thctrust.org, and you can also read, I'm just going to kind of cut this here because I think everything else you can find out on your own, or you can email me for any questions, and that's coaching@thctrust.org. But once you have those two letters, the last step that I discuss on the site is establishing your estate with the IRS, and that's pretty much for enforcement and compliance. A lot of times, even though you have your status straight, somebody will try to judge and say, well, this person doesn't really know what they're doing. Well, if you have your foundation set up with the IRS appropriately, then you can use the IRS for your enforcement when someone's trying to trespass on your estate. And that doesn't matter whether it's judges or sheriff. Nobody is immune. Nobody is immune in the private, and that's why enforcement is so important, and it's one of the things that we're really going to be harping on and working on at thctrust.org. And hence, because of our knowledge about enforcement, that's what puts us in a good position to pursue releasing people from, or pursue the studies for releasing individuals from jail, prison, 10-year sentences, 20-year sentences. It does not matter. If the person, and especially if you know someone that is locked up right now. They don't deserve to be locked up for, you know, for whatever reason, especially if they're somewhat familiar with this technology. Then you need to stay tuned and you need to help support our organization so we can get the information out there and we can establish a work group and a study session to really affect some remedies in this area. So thanks for watching. Make sure you visit the site, and you can email us at coaching@thctrust.org. We also offer coaching and debt settlements and criminal proceedings. We have a writing service. Email us to inquire. And thank you again for watching.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, we're going into the second phase of this because of its importance. And for those of you who just tuned in, you're listening to the Best of Tarka's Archives. And what we're attempting to do this evening is to put some things in your possession that you can actually use to make changes in regards to your circumstances. We're dealing with filing your last will and testament, along with that, your letter of status, the judicial notice and proclamation of status. And that's very important, especially if you're going through something with your mortgage company, bill collectors, if you're dealing with people in your jail, if you have some kind of traffic violation, you got to go to court. You simply put that thing together, put it in place, go ahead and file it into the record for that particular case, and go up in there because they have a record of the fact that they're not dealing with a straw man. They're dealing with a real man, and he's the executor of the estate. And this is very, very important for us to understand and put together so that we'll know how to do this. We are also offering one of the most comprehensive libraries in the United States. The way to access that is simply by calling me, Tahaka Amana L. Bay, at area code 904-303-9061 before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We can get you in there. The templates and stuff that you need to go from A to Z is there. Information concerning your nationality and your culture, your story is there. It is a child safe. It is a tool that your children can use to refute a lot of the false information that's being taught them inside the schools inside the United States. And it's been used very, very effectively by a lot of people across the country. I get phone calls all the time from brothers and sisters whose children is actually running off copies of the information and carrying it into the classroom and comparing it with what they are being taught. And then, of course, they are able to refute the lies and propaganda that's being fostered upon your children. And mine is a terrible thing to waste. So,
Talk Shoe. Recorded live.
Hello, everyone. This is Jerry Lynn here with University of Acadia and Frank O'Collins from Australia, here to speak with us on some more great educational ideas and some options for possible relief and hopefully get some light bulbs switched on. Today is the 17th day of the 8th month, 2011. That would be the 17th of August, 2011, over here on the States over here in, on the, what do we call that, Frank? The west.
For your Katie days?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you put me on the spot.
No, that's okay. We don't have to do your Katie time. Well, it'd be interesting for folks to at least know they can go check out your Katie time.
Yes. I think if they go to Globe, GLOBE, -union.org or even ucadia.com or even 1-heaven.org, they all have the Ucadia time. You can go and look at the Ucadia time there.
Yes, very good. Take a look at that. All right, Frank, let's get the things rolling here. I'll turn it over to you.
Thanks, Terry. Well, hello, everybody. Thanks for coming on tonight, those that are listening live, and also those that will be listening to this call later on. As we say each week, what we're trying to do here is present information that is coming from great research. Not everything's coming from me. Much of this material is coming through conversations and fantastic work that a number of you, many of you, are doing. And as a policy, whenever we encounter important information, whenever we can find some way of validating that information, we want to share that with you as an open knowledge policy. So tonight, I'm looking forward to sharing with you some of the latest research and discussion on the question of what exactly are they doing to us from the time when we're born, from the time we're seven. And so the subject tonight, the topic tonight is going to be on the concept of what does it mean to be in interstate or intestate and the importance of wills. The other area I want to cover, and I'm looking forward to covering this because we haven't spoken about this before in much detail, is what is warrants? What is the mechanics of warrants? Obviously, warrants is an issue that many people have been affected by and many people still have issues with. And I want to share with you some of the insights and the updates to the canons on warrants. When we are talking about intestate, I also want to cover the issue of birth certificates, because I know in the last few weeks, and not just because we've spoken about it, but this issue of what actually is a birth certificate, is it valuable? Is it merely a confirmation that we are some kind of peon from peonage or pauper? What actually is it? Because there are still lots and lots of active discussion on birth certificates. I want to add some more to that, and I want to hopefully clear up as much as we can do what we really mean by birth certificates and those questions. I also want to bring up to speed on the package that was due to go to Rome and is a few days late, but that package should be and hopefully is up on University of Eucadia now. And so I want to share with you what that package is, and those of you who have offered in the past that would like to write, I want to give mention to it, explain it, and show where you can go and see the Word documents and material. And, of course, just some housekeeping. We mentioned websites and some other things and updates to material. I want to go through and let you know where we're at with those things. So there's a few things to cover tonight, but let's get started right up front with this question of intestate and what are they doing to us from the moment that we're born and what does it really mean when we talk about wills? So, as we have been going through and trying to uncover exactly what has the Private Bar Guild, what has the Roman cult, and what has other groups done to us, we have debated and discussed different forms of remedy and different understandings. Some of these you will find are discussed by many groups. Birth certificates, for example, declaring us dead is nothing new. This has been understood for some time, and corporations are dead. These things have been out there in the truth movement for quite some time. At the same time, we have mentioned things like baptism, being a ritual that effectively cleaves your soul in their rituals, and even the word treasure being a hidden description of the most ancient ritual of salvaging of souls in the placing of bronze coins on the eyes, or silver coins on the eyes and the mouth, and of course the transport of the soul across the River Styx to with the ferryman as part of the ancient Egyptian belief system. When we've raised those things, part of the problem is getting a handle on how such a system could actually operate, and getting on top of how such knowledge would be transmitted even to their own members. Now, when we presented the ecclesiastical deed poll, we made clear a number of the assertions and the presumptions and the knowledge that we have. That, number one, we know as an absolute certainty that certain trusts are formed in the name, the legal person name, that we are granted from the time of our birth. We know this. This is a fact. We know it exists. We know it's a fact that there is ecclesiastical rituals associated with the creation of these, and that those rituals are also associated with some of the documents that are created. Hence the drop of blood in one respect, hence the footprints of babies in another respect, hence the use of the word and the name registrar. All these are associated with ecclesiastical ritual. But what we haven't done is we haven't taken the bigger picture yet and viewed the landscape with fresh eyes to see, with the knowledge we have, is there any evidence that may better describe for us the public face of these ecclesiastical rituals. Now, if we've spoken about court, I believe we have provided an abundance of evidence that concur and support that at the root of every court case in Roman court is the sacrament of penance. And we have been able to show that consistent with the sacrament of penance being a confession and a self-confession, that we were able to reveal how they converted and perverted the role of the accusator in Roman law to the role of the prosecutus in order to claim that we ultimately confess ourselves, the prosecutor acting in our own skin. Now, this gave us an insight into how the public face of statute and procedure is a reflection of an ecclesiastical ritual that parallels it. So what is the public face then of this whole aspect of being declared dead, of baptism, of treasure, of the sesterce vis, of all this hidden knowledge that we have discovered, which we still see through the ecclesiastical deed polls, a complete and utter stonewall? What is the public face? Well, let me ask a rhetorical question to all those that are listening. If you were to identify one consistent communication from the private bar guilds across the world, almost as if it was a public service announcement, what would be one of the most commonly spoken of subjects that almost every lawyer will say, and by the time we reach the age of 40, we probably have heard about it dozens and dozens of times? Well, I said it's a rhetorical question, so let me answer that. It is, you need a will. You need a will. It is the one constant that all lawyers and the system rams home to us once we achieve the age of majority of 18, normally, in most countries, and actually continues to increase almost to a fever pitch. You need a will. You have to have a will. If you don't have a will and testament and you die, then guess what? Your estate will be placed into intestate or intestate. And we are told what that means. So pretty much all of us can summarize what intestate means. Intestate means that without a will, your estate will be administered by trustees who will then assume the role of the executor. And as assuming the role of executor, they will decide how your estate is to be administered, not you. Why? Because you don't have a will. Well, this certainly sounds like not only a public service announcement, but clear evidence that the private bar guild has given more than enough knowledge to us as to the importance of a will and what happens to us if we don't have a will. Well, let's now go back and consider this. When is a will in effect? Is it in effect when you write it, or is it only in effect when that will is registered as a deed by a registrar of the Court of Public Record or the Recorder of Deeds? Well, the answer is a will does not exist in their system until it is a deed. Until it is a deed, they may claim outside of court to acknowledge a will, but it is not a will. At that point, it is merely the intention of a will, and until it is recorded as a deed, it is not in effect. So on the one hand, we're told by the Private Bar Guild, you need a will. The will is evidence of your will. I mean, that sounds like a funny wordplay, but that's ultimately what it is. The will is the physical evidence of your intent, your will, your competence, of your own affairs, the management of your own estate. And until it is recorded as a deed, it does not exist in their system. Now, doesn't it seem extraordinary that one of the primary roles of lawyers across the world is as the gatekeepers of wills, to hold them in due course, to ensure they are never registered until the death of the flesh? Now, they may argue that they do this to ensure that, number one, a will is designed properly, and we'll get into the proper design of a will in a moment, and two, because wills are so valuable, is to make sure that it doesn't go lost. But then again, we have other documents that are as important as wills, and lawyers don't seem interested in keeping. And of course, the third is to make sure that if we should die, that it can be recorded and executed. And the other one, they may argue, is the reason we don't submit it as a record, as a deed, until you pass, is that it may change. Well, of course, there is well-established rules and examples of the modification of a will after it has been executed as a deed, of trusts, and that's called codicils. And, of course, the interpretation of wills and probate happens by courts every day of the week. And courts have been shown to modify wills every day of the week. So all of those arguments may sound reasonable superficially, but the one question is, why are they not recorded? Why are they held until the very end? If it is so important that a will and the absence of a will means we're effectively intestate. Now, what is the public ritual that they do to us around the age of seven, around the age of reason, after 7 years have passed, and under sestica jus, if 7 years have passed and the presumption that we are lost and abandoned to the effect of having no effective deed, and it's all perfectly lawful, legal. Now, in our case, and this is very rare, it's extremely rare. In fact, I would say to you it is unprecedented that there has existed a form of law parallel to the Roman cult that provides sufficient detail for the effective administration of trusts and estates. It has simply never been done. Either you nominate the statutes of a Roman settlement, or you scribble down some rules of administration in a will, which of course a constitution is an example of a will in which the rules of administration to some extent are listed. Now, Eucadia cops a lot of flack from a lot of different angles in terms of what is behind the canons. What right are these canons? What is the effect of these canons? We don't need these canons, we just need this. All everything we need is in a book called King James Bible, whatever. There are people saying all kinds of things about the canons. But I will give you one practical example of the use of canons. The canons of law, Astrum Juris Canonum, the canons of one heaven, are a perfect set of rules of administration for the administration of trusts. go and have a look, because we're going to go through in a moment on warrants. Go and have a look at the Canons of Positive Law on 1one-heaven.org. Just go and have a look at that index. That is as comprehensive as any rules of administration you will see in any trust handbook there in front of you. So if you want to write an effective will that prevents the Roman cult from stealing your estate, from corrupting your intent, one only needs to refer to the rules of One Heaven, the canons of One Heaven as the rules of administration, and they cannot screw with your will. And the proof of how important this fourth key part of a will is the fact that it is never included. It is conspicuously absent when wills are created. So they are the key components of what makes an effective will. Well, what makes a defective will? And I think this is important to cover. What makes a defective will? Well, first and foremost, and I would suggest, and this is something to reflect on when we talk about ecclesiastical deed polls, the first mistake with wills and testament is calling the will anything other than a will and testament. On one hand, one could argue that the ecclesiastical deed poll is every bit as clear as what I've just described in terms of a will and testament. And when you have gone, and many of you have gone out and produced your ecclesiastical deed polls, in the first instance, it was for a greater public good. It was to challenge a system and change a system. And I thank each and every one who has been brave enough to send and execute their ecclesiastical deed poll. But in the cone shell game, in the name game that they do with us, an ecclesiastical deed poll is not the same language as will and testament, even if the intent can be argued as being the same. So the first error is that if it's not called a will and testament, it is not a will and testament. Now let me qualify that even further. There have been some brilliant, and I pay due when due is owed, and I pay respect to those that have pioneered many of these areas. And now I pay respect to those that have considered this and known some of this knowledge on the importance of a will and having your will registered while we are obviously alive to negate the presumption of being intestate, but they've called it a living will. Well, if you call it a living will, it's not a will and testament in their system. They're very specific. So what do you call it? You call it a will and testament. You don't embellish it. You don't add to it. You don't subtract it. You don't complicate it. It's a will and testament. That's the first area where a lot of people fall over. What's the second area that people fall over? Your will and testament is not the platform for you to affirm your faith. Even though I have enormous respect to each and every one of us that is able to define and stand by their faith. Now, it may well be in our knowledge of Scripture that it is written that the divine creator, God, whatever name you wish to use, granted us dominion as heirs over the planet. I'm in complete agreement with that. That is outside of the authority that you have in writing a will. God may have done that, but that is not in their system. It's not in the intention of a will, the platform. So if you make assumptions within your will over things to which you have no authority, you're creating fatal flaws in your will. Remember, a will is merely to appoint the executor, to define your claims of right, to nominate the beneficiaries, and to list the rules of administration. Now, if you nominate the rules of administration being the canons of One Heaven, guess what? I get flack for this, but I keep saying it. The principles of the canons of one heaven, the principle of one heaven, is to validate and strengthen our faith, not to weaken it. If you identify yourself as a Christian, then I assume then that it's because you follow Christ. Otherwise, why would you call yourself a Christian? And if you follow Christ, it is you believe the words of the leader Jesus Christ. Now, if you don't consider those words primary, then I would call you a Biblian. And that is you apply the other words that are not ascribed to Jesus Christ as being more important than Jesus Christ. You can't have it both ways. You're either a Biblian or a Christian. But if you look at the coming one heaven and you are a Christian and you dearly want to make sure that your faith is affirmed in your will and testament, then the rules of administration have embedded within them all that affirmed without you having to explicitly state it and create a flaw in your will. There's another example of the strength of the canons and the importance of the canons. So these are flaws, key flaws that people put in. They change the name, living will. They don't call it will and testament, they call it something else. They get into and describe their act of faith. They describe claims, presumptions, all that are outside of the authority that they have in terms of defining their will. And of course, the most important mistake, apart from missing out those rights that you have, is to not include the rules of administration. In fact, the absence of the rules of administration in the will is the single biggest flaw of wills. Okay, so we've now defined, and let's just recap where we're at before we talk about how do we get hold of a form of will and how do we go about recording the will and what does this mean. What we've said is overwhelmingly it appears that the public face of what we've been describing now for some time, where the system declares us dead, is the presumption of us being intestate from the age of 7 onwards. The repudiation of that, the refutation of that, is to ensure that a valid will is recorded and executed as a deed. And that provides us all the proof we need that we are the general executor of the estate, prove our claims of right, prove the beneficiaries, and prove the rules of administration by which we live by, by which the estate is managed. Now, how do we get a template in terms of a valid will? This is something that we will be doing as part of the update to the material on One Heaven, and that will be going to the various court sites. Now, the list of websites for Eucadia, this was a question asked last week, is, if not already up on, will be up on University of Eucadia. There's a list there of the 60 or 70 plus sites, including the court sites. This will be the last week you see on One Heaven the direct references to specific remedy. From next week, it'll all be located, including the template for will, on the various court sites. Now, how do you register? And where do you go to register? There is some debate because this is slightly different in different jurisdictions. But generally speaking, if one was to follow a lawyer and watch what they do, then normally wills are executed as deeds by having them recorded with the recorder of deeds, usually at a county or a council or a city level. Someone with the authority that we described the other day, the town clerk. Remember, the town clerk is also the clerk of the guardians, is also the clerk of the peace, is also the clerk of the magistrates, is also the agent of the clerk of the Privy Council, and of course is most importantly the registrar of the Court of Public Record and the Recorder of Deeds. So generally speaking, that is the level one only needs to go to have a will recorded. And when it is recorded and executed, then that is effective across the entire Roman cult system. Now, to make it simpler, we will make sure that our knowledge on that is clear, and some may have some additional information that they might want to provide on it. So in a nutshell, this is an important validation of our discussions in the last few weeks of how do we establish in this system that we are truly the general executor of our estate? How do we refute these key presumptions that they still use against us? How do we identify to them the rules by which we live by so that these presumptions that we continue to operate as a slave to Rome can be ended? Those discussions, I believe we have addressed very clearly tonight in this latest and I think extremely important information. Now, we will have a template up, and there's only a week, and we will have information up on this. And there was some discussion whether I should raise it tonight or we should leave it. But it is a constant theme at the risk over time of even potentially providing contradictory information as information evolves. But it has been a constant theme that whenever knowledge is obtained, whenever inspiration is provided, to share it with you without condition, without price, without any ulterior motive, that you may know what we have found and you may share, discover, validate, or repudiate what we're sharing. So that is tonight the section on intestate and wills. Though in the time provided, I want to talk about warrants. Might seem a bit of a letdown after talking about that, but warrants is a very serious issue. Even though I might have been chuckling then, warrants is a very serious issue. And I've been asked to talk about warrants in the past, and I think it's high time we talk about it. So I'm going to ask those on the call and those that will listen later to go to Article 290 of Positive Law under 1-heaven.org. Canons of Positive Law, Article 290, to talk about warrants. And you might want to update this page by going to refresh it if you haven't already. Now, we've spoken about warrants before, but there's a key thing that was missed. And it came about from the discussion on what to the effect of having no effective date. And it's all perfectly lawful, legal. Now, in our case, and this is very rare, it's extremely rare. In fact, I would say to you it is unprecedented that there has existed a form of law parallel to the Roman cult that provides sufficient detail for the effective administration of trusts and estates. It has simply never been done. Either you nominate the statutes of a Roman settlement, or you scribble down some rules of administration in a will, which of course a constitution is an example of a will in which the rules of administration to some extent are listed.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, I hope we have gotten the gist of the importance of filing your will. It's very, very important. And the reason it is because it gives you an opportunity to have a record on file of thy will be done in whatever situation that you got. It is an opportunity in the administrative portion of your will for you to, what we call, let it all hang out, so to speak. That gives you the opportunity to write and put on record what you want to be fully understood by whoever it is that you're dealing with. If it's a mortgage company, or if it's a debt collector, if police, sheriff, the mayor, the governor, the attorney general, it doesn't matter who they is. Once you get this information down in the administrative portion of your will, and the entire package is filed on record, it pretty much becomes law. It puts everybody in there, including your opponent's attorney, the judge, everybody on record by law that they are now officially occupying an office of a public trustee, while you occupies the highest office land. The highest a law inside this country is trust law. The highest office of trust law is office of executor of an estate. So once you get this thing filed in, whenever there's a problem, you simply go down there before it's time to go to court and make sure that that will is added to the case that you're going to be going in for. And don't be surprised if you get a call ahead of time letting you know that we're going to reschedule you, or re-hold another case, or reappoint this thing, or until we get a way to try to figure out what to do. But there is no way of getting around that unless they are willing to publicly break every law in the book. But don't put it past them. And I always have a backup plan. But that alone is an extremely powerful position to be in. And later on in other broadcasts, we're going to come in and provide information for you to maneuver into the secured party creditor status. Now there are a lot of people who are into the secured party aspect, but what we are talking about is the secured party creditor aspect, with the actual account set up for the discharging of a debt and so on and so forth. But I wanted to bring this information here to you this evening as a foundation, so that we will be able to go on to more and better things, more things, because there's a ton of other things that's going to be coming. Ladies and gentlemen, for those of you who are just tuning in, you're listening to the Best of Tahaka's Archives. I'm your host, Tahaka Manael Bay, and we have our free articles as usual, the 14th Amendment Exposed, the Commerce Game, and the history of the United States, and how we got in this mess in the first place. And information concerning the country's this corporation's bankruptcy and all of that, and we like you to have that as a foundation in your mind, so you understand what you're dealing with. See, there's a whole lot of things that you can do, but if you don't know how we got in the situation that we're in the first place, then that puts us behind the eight ball, so to speak. So you access that by contacting me, and I'll send it right straight to you at tahaka53@hotmail.com, and I'll rush it to you. Also, for those of you who are ready to go to work and use tools that are being discussed in these broadcasts and other posts that we're putting out, contact me at area code 904-303-9061, and we'll get you into the most comprehensive library in the Western Hemisphere, and other hemispheres too at that. And we'll guide you through this thing and make sure that you understand what you had to do step by step, and so that you can succeed and maneuver into position inside the United States of America Corporation, operating under contract law, and which is the fabric of the country itself. Okay, now we're going on to the next plug, and then we're gonna move forward.
Fontes, who am I speaking with?
Yes, this is Bernie at Sam's Club.
Yes, how are you doing today?
I'm doing good. I had some information on your tax exempt, on what we needed to do, and what we have on to be tax exempt here at Sam's Club. First of all, the items that you have to purchase tax exempt would be for resale, would be one category, and then the next one would be like a nonprofit organization, and the other one would be a state or government entity.
Now,
yes.
Again,
do you qualify for any of those?
Whenever the corporation in which the corporate fiction in which you're employed by has first an obligation to me, as I am a national. Now, you can check the laws, the federal laws. That means that if they don't have any documentation on there for nationals, something's not right. Because I'm not...
For sales tax, it has to be taken up with the state. It's not a federal state.
But that's a corporate state. I am not a ward of the state, and I'm not operating with the benefits as a corporation. I'm a natural person. I say again, my name is not spelled with all capital letters in a cognomen. I am not, and your company didn't use full disclosure when they took the nomen and the cognomen and turned them into a corporate fiction. And that's called fraud, and I'm trying to work with you. I don't want any trouble like that. I just want you to uphold your obligations to me, and I'm objecting to the fact that when you transfer a tax to an individual who objects to it, that's called extortion. That's a no-no. That's reducing a person's labors to peonage. You can't do that. I have a nationality. Now, with the nationality, my rights are secured inalienable, unalienable by the Constitution. And then, Let me say this really fast. At the front desk,
let me write this down and what your qualifications would be. It's a nationality. What?
I am a national. I am Aboriginal and Indigenous to this landmass. I am a Moor.
So in the state of Idaho, that is supposed to
again,
be
again. You're saying this. I am a member of the Republic, the organic state of Idaho, not a corporate state.
So you're living here in Idaho, correct?
I live in the organic state of Idaho. I am not a corporate fiction. I am not operating as a corporation. And you can't force that upon me and transfer your taxes to me. Trust me, I deal with this all the time. That's a serious no-no.
Well, you might need to take that up with the state of Idaho.
Again, no, it's your company that I'm dealing with. And so
correct, but we deal with the state of Idaho.
And that's not. I don't have any contracts with the state of Idaho. You have contracts with the state of Idaho, not me, with the corporate state.
The only time we don't collect sales tax for the state of Idaho is if it's for resale.
I'll explain this to you.
Or if it's a nonprofit organization, or if it's a government.
The paperwork I gave you is more than enough that you put that in your documentation to write off, to say that you offered it to me, an offer. I did not, I considered the offer. I did not accept it because I'm not waiving any of my rights. And so, again, I'm letting you know right now, under Title 18, that's called fraud, extortion, and racketeering. And I'm trying to work with you because you can't force that on me. And all they're going to see is that you're trying to force that obligation on me. And you can't do that, man. Again, I'm in the organic landmass of Idaho. I am not a corporate fiction, and I'm not operating as a corporation. I have a nationality. And I also will make sure I forward this information to the international criminal courts because that's not how it works.
Okay.
I'm trying to tell you how to deal with it. If I went to you and I wanted a job with your corporation, I don't even have to take out Social Security. You're not obligated to do so. And all I have to do is you would offer it to me, and I would give you a written letter of consent showing you that you offered it to me. That's all you have to do is offer it to me. That's the only obligation you have. No different than when my child was born. I had a baby that was just my child was born not too long ago. He is not a part. He's not a ward of the state. The people who birthed him offered a particular document to me. I did not accept it. I wrote them a piece of paper saying they offered it to me, and they were waived. Instead of being fined by the corporation that they have a contract with, I don't have a contract with them. But when you're taking my personalities as a servant, it's worthy of his hire, and I went and bought something with my, that's my personal property.
and you're taxing my personalities. You don't have a delegation of authority order from Congress to lay and collect taxes from anyone, and that's a corporate fiction in which you're laying, that you're collecting taxes for, because you have a contract with them, because they're transferring debts to what are called through enfranchisement. My name is not a European cognomen. My name is Morse. And so you can't, it's unalienable. You can't transfer a bond to it. You can't put liens against it, because I'm not using an enfranchised name. I'm trying to tell you how it works.
Well, I'm trying to tell you how, what our guidelines are here.
All right, here's what, my friend, here's what. Know this. It's a corporate fiction in which I'm dealing with. And so I always can record my phone calls. And so a corporate, I'm dealing with you a corporate fiction, meaning you're trying to pull me into your jurisdiction, and I'm telling you I object to it. So you can tell by the, I'll tell you this, by this afternoon or before this afternoon, as soon as I'm off the phone with you, this phone call will be all over the internet, and it'll also be, the link will be forwarded to the International Criminal Courts. And then you talk to me about what you're saying, because that's called a forced obligation, that taxes were forced on me. Forced obligation is denoted as peonage. Peonage is definitely abolished. Now, I know the law very well.
All I know is the guidelines that I have to go by.
All right, well,
here.
I appreciate, you know what?
You're going to be taken up by the state of Idaho.
Well, no, you have to take that up. Well, here's what, my friend. Again, I'm getting ready to post this all over the internet and all over the web. So they'll know, and that way I have proof. I have proof that I was being extorted. I have proof of peonage, of trying to reduce me to a state of peonage. Forced obligation denotes slavery, my friend. And you don't have any.
I imagine you have the right to put anything you want on the internet.
Again,
I just want you to understand that
it does, you know
the
what?
Guidelines that we have here,
I do not waive any of my rights
for your,
with equitable
for your
remedy by estoppel. And so now what that means is, listen to me, my friend. I'm trying to let you know what that means. The corporation puts you out front there, and you're going to be one of the first individuals to be in trouble, because you're the one that's in the front.
I don't think so.
You don't think so?
No, I'm just doing my job.
You're racketeering. You're part of the fraud.
I'm doing my job. I'm not racketeering. I'm doing my job.
You're part of the fraud.
Yeah.
So you're.
Anyway, I'm gonna go down to the state of Idaho and see if there is any other thing that possibly might be an exclusion on this that the Home Office is overlooking. If that's the case, you know, I'll give you a call back to see if we can get it straightened out. But as it sits right now, your tax exempt status wasn't approved.
I'm not tax exempt. I'm tax non-obligatory. It's not my obligation. I'm not obligated. Exemption would denote that I had to get permission from someone. I don't need permission from anyone.
Well, you know, yeah, it's going to have to be that way through our Home Office.
I don't need permission. You can't deny me even to conduct business there or to buy anything there. You can't do that.
Well, if you do, you're going to have to pay sales tax as it stands right now.
Again, you show. Okay, here's what. Since you're so confident about that, you send that to me in writing and sign your name to it. I'll give you. You send that to me in writing and sign your name to it. Or you.
Send what to you?
You write that in writing that I have to pay taxes. I have to pay sales taxes. You pin your name to it. You sign your name to it. Please do that for me.
Well, no, I don't need to, because it's not my.
No, but you're the one saying
the
that you have
Idaho.
A. You're saying no. You have a contract with the corporate state of Idaho. I don't. Again, you
this
put.
This is a matter between you and the state.
No,
of
it's a matter between you. No, I don't have any contracts with the state of Idaho, and I do not waive any of my rights with equitable remedy by estoppel. I'm letting you know right now, if you're so confident in what you say, write that down and sign your name to it.
No, this is a matter you need to take up with the state of Idaho.
I don't have any contracts with the state of Idaho. You, sir, you have a good day.
You need to take care of the state of Idaho, okay?
I in no way waive my rights, and you, sir, have a good day. I see that you wouldn't pin your name to that either. It's
not up to me. It's up to the state of Idaho.
Again, you have a contract with the state of Idaho. I appreciate that. And you have a certified document there showing that I'm not a corporation or operating in a corporate capacity. And you're still going to try to force tax obligations upon me? Man, that's called peonage, man.
It shows what you are as a part of an LLC, a limited liability company. That's all it says.
Bullcrap. It says here, right in front of me, it says, I, Ben Yeshua, Secretary of State of the State of Idaho, hereby certify that I am the custodian of the corporations, limited partnership, limited liability companies, limited liability partnerships, and assumed business names records in this state. I further certify that the record of this office failed to show that the cognomen of Chinyera K. Duru, which is a Moorish name, a natural person, and in the corporate capacity, is not a corporation. And the way you have it printed here, it's not a corporation. And you got it right there in front of you. It's a certified copy. Now, what you're going to end up doing...
It just shows that you're a part of an LLC.
No, it doesn't. It shows that it's not a corporation. It's right there in front of you. This is called a corporate negative search. Anyone can go do one. It's called a corporate negative search, and this is a certified copy. You play games with someone who doesn't understand this if you want to. Now, again, you're breaking international law. I am a national.
A national. Well, you know, all I know is...
Let me explain this to you. What's your name, my friend? What's your name? Respectfully.
My name's Murray.
Murray, what's your last name?
I don't need to give you that.
No, I'm not being funny. I'm just asking you what you... Because you sound European to me. You don't have any...
No,
you're not European?
No, uh-uh.
What are you?
Born and raised right here.
Just because you're born here doesn't make you American. So you're aboriginal and indigenous to this landmass?
Well, born and raised here, if that's what that means. Yeah.
Consanguinity. Where's your family bloodline air from originally?
You know, that has nothing to do with it.
Yeah, it sure does, because you're not... Here you are, you're trying to put an obligation upon me, and you haven't even proved your status. My status is right there for the record.
Idaho is trying to put the obligation on you. That
No, they put that obligation on you,
right,
and you're
now,
passing it to
you
me.
You need to take it up with Santayat. You need to take that up with the state of Idaho.
No, you need to.
And
I don't waive my rights. You have a good day. I'll take care of it. Don't worry about it. I'll take care of it with you, with your corporation.
Oh.
You know, I really love that one. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, I see we have a one red flag. I'm going to open up this caller. We only have a few moments left, so please be brief. Area code 904, could you tell us who you are? What's your question, comments, and where are you calling from? Area code 904. Last four numbers, 2884. Could you tell us who you are? What's your question and comment? Area code 703. Could you tell us who you are? Where you calling from? What's your question and comment?
Mr. Aquila, and my comment is I like your show, and I'll tune in more often.
Okay, how you doing, Aquila?
I'm blessed.
All right.
I'm here tonight.
I made it over here. How's everything going up there with you?
So far, so good. Very informative. The executive letter, executive state, and I'm going to work on it and get it done. And I'll
All right.
Get it out for me.
Okay.
Say a shout out to my sister Shirley and Antoinette if you're listening.
Is the library working out for you?
Perfect.
Okay.
Who knew?
All right.
I'll probably give you a check tomorrow, God's will.
All righty. Let me go on to the next caller. Okay.
Right.
Bye bye.
Bye.
Area code 904. First three numbers, 402. Tell us who you are, where you're calling from, what's your question, comment. We only have 5 minutes left.
Good evening. Van Lewis here in the state of Florida, Middleburg, Florida.
All right. Let me have it, brother.
Okay. excellent show. Very, very clear and concise, and I hope many, many other Moors and those people that are called, still choose to go by the name Negro, Black, and Colored would begin to tune in and gain this very informative information. It's very clear now. And
okay.
I thank you for what you're doing. Keep doing
all right.
Job.
Thank you, sir. Well, I appreciate you calling in. I'm going to go ahead and mute your mic. Ladies and gentlemen, go ahead and raise your hands now. We have a few moments left, and we get you in there. And you can give us your questions and comments. I hope we have provided you with some information that you can use this evening. And we're going to be dealing with part three of this, and we're going to continue bringing you and reposting the most vital information that you can use and that you need to understand so that you can make the necessary corrections and changes and successes that you have to make in your life. And I'm looking at the clock now, and the time is fleeting. And I certainly appreciate all of you who come out to listen to this broadcast and don't hesitate to listen to it over and over until you get it down to a science and you're able to use the information that we have put here for your benefit. Keep in mind that I've been banned by Facebook, so what I need you all to do is send me your friend request, and when you send that to me, I'll grant it. That'll give you access to my wall, all of my links and stuff where you can go other places and get other information so that you can use, you'll have tools that you can use. You won't just be stuck when you got a problem or you're being threatened through the mail or over the telephone by your bill collectors. You'll know what to do with them. And so I encourage you to send me your friend requests. If you have Facebook, if you're on Twitter, MySpace, the Drop Squad, get a hold of me. You can contact me at area code 904-303-9061 before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and I'll go ahead and get you into the most comprehensive library inside the United States. You can send from a free article at hawker53@hotmail.com, and we'll get you in there. And don't forget Dr. Scott Whitaker right here in Jacksonville, Florida, right down the street from my house. I'll be there. I'll get a chance to meet you. If you're in Jacksonville, Florida, be here on the November the 18th, and you'll get a ton of very, very important information for your health, because none of this stuff makes any difference to you if you don't have good health. So make sure you're there and so that you can get this brother's teaching. I've been your host, Tahaka Monael Bay, and until Sunday evening, Brother Kamitu U Bay is going to be here. So make sure you tune in so we can finish with this, we can continue with you, federal, state, and civil procedure. Brother Kamitu U Bay will be here Sunday evening at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And then, of course, the last day of this month, we're going to have Brother Abdullah back with the ethymology. Okay? So you all have a good evening.